Welcome back to part two of our podcast with Patrick Boyd. If you missed part one, check it out and learn about how Patrick got into the club making business and where his love of golf course architecture comes from. We got a lot of great feedback from everyone on part one. It's been much appreciated, and I hope you enjoy part two with Patrick Boyd.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Sweetens is certainly in the fun category. Bandon is, is a fun course.
Totally changed. It's like being out there for 4 years completely changed my perception of golf and like how I value, like just how I appreciate and enjoy golf.
What are the other most fun golf courses?
The other most fun golf courses
that you've played? Like what are your, like just the places that, you know, might not be the best golf course from an architectural standpoint, if like, you know, you're looking at architect, but like what are the most fun places that you've played?
Most fun. That's gonna take me a minute, man.
It's okay. We got minutes and hours and we can cut.
I think the two of us have kind of a mutual love of Seth Rayner and CB McDonald and Banks. I have so much fun going out and playing their golf courses because you kind of know what you're getting, but every course there's just all these little nuances in every version of an Eden or a Double Plateau or an Alps, or where the strategies are going to be kind of similar, but where they were built and the land's going to be different. That's, I don't know. I probably have my most fun playing their golf courses just because I just kind of enjoy, maybe it's like the OCD in me or something. I just like enjoy the similarities and differences in playing their courses.
I think there's something to be said about that. That's why everybody loves the Masters, is they know what's coming. They know, and I think that's something that's, you know, it's, in a sense, it's unique to them, even though a lot of people will say, like, their courses aren't unique,
it's
which is, I think, like
a horrible take.
Yeah. I think it's just a horrible take, because I think 100%. a lot of the best holes at Rayner courses and are the ones that aren't the templates.
Oh, dude, like, we've had this conversation how many times about the back nine at Shore Acres?
Yeah, and two, like, and just, 11
I mean,
and
Shore,
15.
Just Shore Acres in general. Dude, 11 might be the best Rayner par 5, like, anywhere.
Or 15, you mean?
15 might be the best Rayner. And, dude, 11 is just, like, it's just so awesome and dramatic and just, I don't know.
It's just a found
golf hole.
I love that.
I just, yeah. It's just an awesome hole. And I've seen people play from down below before too.
On 11?
Yes.
Oh, I've been down there.
I saw somebody make par from down there.
I've made par from down there.
What do you hit off the tee that puts you there?
You know, I know I can make par from down right. I know I can't. You can't. It's hard to make par if you pull it left. So if I'm going to miss, I'm going to fan it. I'm going to fan it right, and I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to have a completely blind shot. But it's like it's 160 yards or 150 yards. You can hit that shot onto the green. But like if you got to chip out, then you have all of a sudden have to hit the wedge close. So it's way better to miss. It's like one of those contradictory things. Missing right there, it looks like the worst place in the world to miss. It's not that bad. I think it's kind of like what Doak does.
Yeah, I've never even considered walking up to that tee with a driver in my hand.
Oh, I never like, would hit driver.
Never. Or like I hit one iron a lot off of tees.
Oh,
like,
God. I played it this summer.
I hit one iron.
It was so fast. My buddy hit a hybrid and it ran like 60 yards into the crap. It was insane. It was the fastest golf course I think I've ever played in my life. The ball was literally like bouncing 20 feet off the ground and just running. It was, and it had this brown tinge. It was unbelievable. It was probably my favorite
the
round
tan,
of golf.
Yeah, the tan. The tan is hard to beat. You see the tan,
I've never seen a Chicago golf course play that way, and it was like the most beautiful thing in the world. But, you know, it's I just wish more places would embrace the tan.
It's such a dramatic change from that place from what it was like 10 years ago, too, as far as just, I mean, obviously all the work they've done out there opening up the vistas, but mainly just how firm and fast they've been able to get it and keep it. I mean, that's golf to me, man. Golf isn't golf without bounces. Mm-hmm.
It's
unbelievable what they did at that place.
So you're moving out to Bandon, Oregon. Bend, Oregon.
Yeah.
Not Bandon. No, Bandon. Yeah, Bandon, Oregon. Yeah.
Bandon. Yeah. Yeah.
It's I always say I psychologically have moved to Bend. Sorry. But how many times
a lot of people do move to Bend. A lot of people do move to Bend. It's like it's been growing and there's a bit of golf out there.
Yeah,
but it's not Bandon.
Yeah. But what's your power? How would you split 10 rounds between those courses out there?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say Old Mac wasn't done the last time I was out there. When we had Scratch and we were in Eugene, that place was almost a weekly adventure. We'd go out there a lot. If I had to split 10 rounds out there, I'd probably play six of them in Pacific. And this is, like I said, I haven't played Old McDonald. The first thing I do when I get out there is play Old McDonald.
Well, you got one, you're going to have one at Old McDonald regardless. So you got one goes to Old McDonald and there's an asterisk. It could be more.
Okay. I saw that place. Ari and I used to walk that place when they were building it, and we saw it kind of being built in. And it's really an interesting thing, Andy. A lot of people I know that are into architecture, when you ask them about that place, it's almost like a litmus test, because like a lot of people I know just they aren't fans of it. I've met fewer people that like it than don't. But anyway, 10 rounds out there. I'd probably go six. I'd probably play six of them at Pacific, three of them at Trails, and the other one at Bandon Dunes.
Interesting.
Not that I dislike Bandon Dunes, but I just like Pacific and Trails that much more.
Yeah, that's the thing with those. It's like picking. I always say this. Like it's kind of one of the things I think about with courses. It's like there's certain courses. Like once you get into a certain tier, it's like picking which supermodel is the most beautiful. It's like everybody's going to have a different opinion.
Oh, it's like, oh, yeah, I agree a lot. It's like, it's when you talk to anybody too about what, you know, their top courses or their top five. It's like when you talk to that, you know, you're flavoring it a lot with your personal preferences. Some people like firm and fast. Some people don't like firm and fast. Some people like corridors. Some people like width. There's, you know, just everything's kind of colored with your preference at some point when you're talking about golf. But
hey, of course,
I've played, man. Yeah.
A question I ask a ton of people is, who do you already brought up Rainer, McDonald. But
yeah.
Who's the most underappreciated architect?
Most underappreciated? I'm a fan of Perry Maxwell. I think Perry Maxwell kind of fills that spot.
The Duke.
This is kind of like the secret sauce on like a lot of golf courses. I think the world of Prairie Dunes, and anything of his that I've seen that he's touched. And, you know, I mean, Crystal Downs got, man, one of the best sets of greens I've seen really anywhere. Although they bristle, they're all about like the McKenzie heritage there. But like, I think Perry's pretty, I think he's pretty underrated or just underappreciated maybe.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know. Who's it for you, Langford?
Oh yeah, I'm a Langford Moreau tragic at this point. I think about
Dude,
Langford.
Banks is like another one too that like nobody really talks about.
Yeah,
I think Banks doesn't get a lot of love. Then again, there aren't like a ton of like great. Well, you got like Whippoorwill, Forsgate,
Somebody told me about this Francis Byrne place in New Jersey. Francis Byrne. It's like, apparently Essex County used to own it in New Jersey.
Huh.
And it's and it's $45 public course, and it's a bank. So I think the first hole is like a road hole, the second hole is a Brits. Like, it's apparently really cool. It's $45. You can go see like McRainer. It's on my high on my list of places.
Essex is good. Have you played Essex? Essex is good as well.
Up in Massachusetts or in New Jersey?
In New Jersey.
That's a Tillinghast, right?
No.
Ross?
Banks? No, it's a Banks.
I've seen that thing listed. I think they've had like four people work
there. It's like a Tillinghast Bank. I've seen like Tillinghast Banks. Yeah. There were two courses there. And I think what you're talking about was part of maybe the original. There was 36 there originally.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you that was part of it.
Well, the thing with those, with Langford, Moreau, and Banks, I feel like, is they came to the height of their powers at the worst time. The Depression hit. And then post-Depression, people were like, how the hell are we supposed to maintain this stuff? And they just didn't understand
and so much of it went away because of that.
You play
those courses and you see very clearly defined areas that were once this was obviously a bunker. This was obviously this, but you know, they've just kind of taken them. They've taken them out over the years because they just don't see why it's there. But
like the thing I think is like they were like they kind of turned it up a whole nother notch, and then it's like the society was like, this is unfair. That's what I kind of think. It's like I feel like Yale started that. And then everybody that saw it after the World War II was like, this is unfair. It's like the fair thing.
Well, then people and then trees started to become. Then clubs started planting trees and courses lost a lot of width and character. And I mean, that whole stranglehold started in the 50s, the 60s.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. A lot of these
it's the Hogan effect.
Yeah,
I feel like Ben Hogan had like a lasting effect on golf course design.
Or just in that sense, just like what they did to Oakland Hills, what RTJ did to Oakland Hills, which you know was apparently the nastiest open course ever.
Going back to Maxwell, I feel like. What you said about Crystal Downs, there's so many similarities with Prairie Dunes and Crystal Downs, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, man. It's secret, like I said, man, secret sauce.
Mm-hmm.
He's a secret sauce.
I think about that with McKenzie all the time. He had Perry Maxwell and he had Rob Hunter. Rob Hunter was kind of just like Maxwell. I mean, it makes sense. If you're going to do great work, you need great people.
And Hunter worked with him on pretty much everything in California, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Hunter was the reason that he came to America in the first place.
He came over, yeah, and they did in Meadow, and then Meadow was the first project that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I was spoiled growing up just knowing all that stuff was out there. I didn't play Meadow until, I don't know, probably about 15 years ago or so, but, like, just having PASA and then, you know, Sharp, just, you know, I get out to Sharp once in a while and, you just kind of see little bits and pieces of really cool stuff out there. And then, you know, Green Hills is another one.
Northwood.
Cypress, obviously. Northwood. Yeah, Northwood. I love the story of Northwood. Northwood was built for the Bohemian Club originally because their camp, the Bohemian Grove is out there. It's in Monterio. Yeah. And the course was originally built for them. And then it just, I want to get out there because we used to go out there. We used to go out to the coast a lot growing up and I've driven by the course. My dad was a Bohemian, and I saw the course a few times going to the Grove. But we used to stay out at Sea Ranch, like around the holidays, and I always wanted to go up there, but I never made it. I just was complacent and played a lot of golf at Sea Ranch.
I don't think that's that far from Bandon. So, you know,
it's a ways south. Like it's probably if you took one straight down. I bet you it's probably a 5-6 hour drive. straight down one.
Yeah, it's not that far.
Which is, yeah.
You know, people do that for Sweetens Cove.
I'll hit it. I'll meet you. I know they do. Dude, I've done, I mean, like, man, I told you the day before the ringer, I drove up to play Moraine before they punched it for the winner. I drove up, I played 36 and I drove back and then the ringer was the next day. It was that was like a 10 hour. No, it was more than that. That was like, that was like a 12 hour round trip.
Yeah. I mean, that's
just for 36.
That's what a true golf lunatic will do. You know, that's like,
Dude, there's this one trip we took. I think I've told you this story. There's one trip we took. We rented a car. It was like when we had scratch. We had all these appointments like all over. This is like a whole other story in itself. But we rented a car. We were gone for 2 weeks. We went to 13 states. We went 5,000 miles on this rental car. And I think we drove to Yale. Like, we had Yale planned on the trip. But we drove back there, I think, two more times in that trip when we were like absolutely nowhere near it because we couldn't think of anywhere else we'd want to play more than Yale.
I love Yale so much. Like, it's just the best. I don't think there's like it's as good as anything else in the world, in the country.
Dude, with like a little TLC, that place could be just like tops. Like it's just this gigantic golf course on this awesome piece of land. It's rough around the edges. There's a few things that they could update. There's really, I mean, but I'm with you. And I know a lot of guys that have played a lot of McDonald Rainer golf courses that put that at the very top. I have one friend that likes it more than National. So
it's just,
and what can you really do? Cause the university owns the golf course. You know, I mean, that's like the stumbling point, or that's like the dilemma. I mean, you move three green back to where it was originally.
Double punch.
You do a few other, the double punch bowl on the pond.
Fix the bunkers.
Fix the bunkers. Restore 18 green. You see pictures of 18 green, how 18 green there was originally, and it was like freaking wild. It was like, I don't know. It looks like it was probably like 12,000 square feet. The bunkers were just like gnarly all around it.
What do you think of 18?
That place. It's, I don't know, man. It's kind of a polarizing hole. It's not, I mean, I don't know. It's not my favorite finishing hole. It's not a bad hole. It's just not my favorite finishing hole. What do you think of 18? What do you think of 18?
I love it. I just,
do you?
You know what?
You like that uphill blind tee shot par five.
Here's my thing is like that whole place is like, to me, if you're a fair police golfer, you're gonna hate that place. If you believe in overcoming obstacles and that golf is not a fair game.
Did you say fair police?
Yeah, the fair police. That's my new term.
Gotcha. All right,
so it's the same.
I like it.
The fair police are the people that thought it was ridiculous that when some player in the U.S. Open short sides themselves into a downslope in the worst possible position on a hole and can't hold the green out of the bunker, that it's unfair. That like, oh, you hit it in the worst place you possibly could and you can't hold the green. That's perfectly fair. That's the fair police.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Finish your thought.
That's the fair. So like, to me, I think I've started to think about golf architecture. And I think like, you know, when you have something that's not overly hard, like I don't think the 18th at Yale is overly hard. It's hard.
No, I wouldn't say it's overly hard. I wouldn't say it's an overly hard hole.
But
no,
it forces an extreme discomfort the better the player you are. Like, I feel like a 20 handicap, like, it doesn't make any difference to them. You know, they're just, it's really wide. It's really open. It's hard to lose a golf ball on the hole. But, like, for a good player, like, it's the most uncomfortable, excruciatingly painful finishing par five. And that's great. That it fits the character of the golf course so well.
Excru- excruciating.
I mean,
it's a severe term.
Yeah,
I'm not disagreeing with you, but like, it's a pretty severe term.
I mean, the last time I played it, I was over right over the mound, and I'm standing there.
You didn't have the hickory driver in your hand there, did you?
No, I played one round with the hickory Bellotta. It was insane.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I carried the water on one by like 2 yards. Like, and it makes you think back to like when 1925 or 20.
Oh, I played that place with Persimmon in Modern Ball. But I can't imagine. I just with Bellotta,
it's just
2 yards over, and you're pretty long, and you're pretty long with technology.
Yes.
So that's, you know.
But it gives you an idea. Imagine playing it in a suit coat.
Yeah.
Like it had to be impossible.
With a wooden shaft.
Yeah, that's what I think about.
A ball that went like 10-15% shorter than that Bellotta ball.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's the way I look at it. It's like, oh, we have it so easy now. Like, if you want to say that it's unfair, it's like that's crazy to me.
Well, dude, I'm sure you probably agree with me, but like, man, that's like, to me, that's like the greatest enjoyment when you play with hickories and persimmon and steel, and you go out and you like play a good round with that stuff. It's like, it's just like hard fought. Like, it's just, it just makes it feel that much sweeter. Like shooting a decent round with that equipment. Like it's so rewarding. At least it is to me when I play with that stuff. Like I play a good round with that. It's like, wow. I played with 100-year-old golf clubs and you know, this is what I broke 80 with them. Like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
That the par fives is where I recognize the biggest difference.
Yeah, because you're not going to hit a lot. You're not hitting a lot of them in two.
Like none of them.
Unless you're really good with driver off the deck.
Yeah. You got to hit like really good shots to make a birdie. And it's just such a paradigm shift from, you know, what it is today. You want to do overrated, underrated?
Sure.
All right. We're going to start with Bermuda.
I already know how I feel about Pebble. Overrated, underrated courses, architects, what?
Bermuda grass.
I know how you feel about it. I mean, I've been thinking about it. Obviously, like living in the South, you don't really have a lot of alternatives, so it is what it is, but it has its shortcomings as far as how sticky it is around the greens. But it just grows, Andy. That's the thing. It's just, it's hard to like underrate it or over it. It's like the most, like 419 is like a super weed. It'll grow like through a sidewalk. So I don't know. Rated. How's that?
You Maybe can't, that's not an acceptable answer.
I'll side with you because, I mean, there's other surfaces that I obviously like playing better. So I'll say it's overrated.
Yeah.
How's that?
Turning
it
your back.
It is fun when it's dormant, dry. Dormant and dry, though, baby. That's about as fun as it gets on Bermuda.
Yeah. You're turning your back on the South. Just think about that. Let's, what about A?
What was the first golf course you played that was all fescue, like Bandon?
I don't even know. To be honest, I don't have awareness to when the first course I played. It could have been when I was a kid.
You weren't woke at that point. So
yeah, I'm sure I played one when I was a kid, but I wouldn't have known. You know, what about A.W. Tillinghast?
I mean, he obviously did some great work. Then again, he did a lot of stuff like in the 30s during, like, he did a lot of WPA projects removing fairway bunkers from golf courses.
Yeah.
Great green complexes, but I don't know. I mean, SF's pretty awesome. I haven't played a ton of his stuff. I played San Francisco probably a dozen times or so, and it's pretty fantastic, but I don't know. I probably err towards overrated.
All right. Yeah. I I haven't seen enough of his stuff. I got to do a big Northeast trip where I just crank out some Tillinghast.
I've played SF. I've played SF about a dozen times. I played Philly Cricket before they did work out there. I know there's a few more of his courses that I've played. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. But
what about?
What about Ross? What's your stand? What about Ross? What do you think about Ross?
I think
he's overrated or underrated.
I think he's underrated because he did so many courses and like none of them really stink.
No, none of them. None of them. They all. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. It's just, it's so weird when people like talk about like, you know, oh, Ross number two. But number two is kind of atypical, and you know, number two is kind of atypical of most of his other golf courses. I think Ross is delicious, man. I've played a lot of great Ross golf courses, and I've yet to see a bad Ross golf course.
What about the North Carolina Sandhills?
I'm embarrassed to say this, but I have not been out there yet. I've lived out here for 9 years. I have not been out there yet. I've been trying to get out there before I move out of here, but I haven't been out there, and there's a lot I need to see out there.
What about the PXG troops?
I'll tell you something, man. If Bob Parsons was in front of me right now, I would probably like knock him over with a bear hug, just thanking him so much for what he's done for just how golf equipment is perceived and sold these days. He's like the patron saint to me of like all these boutique brands, because if he wasn't doing what he did, because I mean, I had so Custom Works, you know, we were doing him a custom products, similar price point, but we were really an outlier. There was nobody else who was offering something similar. It was more expensive, and you know, you kind of, you know, it's the stumbling point. Well, you know, all of a sudden, you know, there's golf clubs on the market that are, the market accepts, that are, you know, $3,000 or so for a 3-through pitch set, and there's wedges that are $700 and people are buying them. All of a sudden, these boutique brands have an opportunity to have a foothold in the market and to offer something completely different than what they do. So, I mean, in that sense, I'm a huge supporter of theirs in that regard. And I mean, you know, their equipment's, they make a nice piece of equipment if you're really into technology and, you know, fast faces and forgiveness. Yeah. Okay. And high bounce. Their irons are pretty high bounce.
There is kind of like, I have a lot of like hipster coffee joints by me, and you go in them and you hear the people like, you know, they loathe like Starbucks, and it's like, you're in business because of Starbucks. Like they made it possible.
Yeah.
They made it acceptable to charge a $3 for a cup of coffee, $4, $5 for a cup of coffee. Yeah. Like that's why people come to your place now, because they realize like, hey, you got a better product than Starbucks. Like they're the gateway drug. PXG is probably very similar for. I never really thought about that before.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that was a huge paradigm shift in the market as far as how, you know, the price point that people accepted to buy golf clubs. It really changed. I mean, when we had, you know, 5 years ago when Scratch was around, it was a much harder proposition. And now, you know, the price point that we're at with what we sell, it's, you know, people are willing to pay it because, you know, we offer, you know, very, very different product from, I mean, it's very traditional. We make golf clubs like they were made 50, 60 years ago. But if businesses, you know, if they weren't around, who knows? I don't necessarily know that there would be the market that there is now for that stuff because of, you know, just being, you know, being an option and being completely different from them. I mean, it's just about anything needs a foil, I think, to be, you know, successful. But
so let me ask you this question. If you could bring back, you know, one piece of golf equipment, like one club from the, you know, yesteryear, and make it like in vogue again, what would it be? And then what was the most gimmicky concept of, say, the 90s and 2000s?
I mean, I don't know. Because there's not just like one club I can just think of. I mean, I wish people would like embrace or at least go out and try playing golf with with vintage golf equipment. So I mean, my club would be like probably just that genre of persimmon head, steel shaft, or wooden shaft. I just think it adds a lot of value and appreciation to golf, and I think a lot of people should at least just try it and just gain an understanding of what playing golf is like with that stuff. And I mean, I've kind of made a pledge to myself next year to, I'm probably going to play all next year with just persimmon. I mean, I don't know why not. So if you want in on that bet, man, let me know. The worst, most gimmicky, man.
There's so many.
There are so many, and it's like, because you can pick all kinds of them. Like Callaway had that C4 driver that was like their carbon fiber driver. Yeah. But like the thing, yes, it was like, it was horrible. But like the thing is like, they took what they learned making that driver, and then the first like composite like metal and carbon driver was next. Like the first fusion driver came out right. I was like, this quantum leap. It's like, oh, let's just make this like, this just like horrible, horrible driver and learn about this technology and then apply what we learned to something that's actually really good. Cause that first fusion driver was a pretty big deal when it came out.
That carbon driver was like the worst feeling driver.
Dude, it was horrible. It was terrible.
You know, a club that you didn't mention in the five most influential thing was the club.
What?
Was the Ping TS ISI driver. Remember that one? The black one?
Oh, I do remember that one. Yeah, that had the plastic hosel and had the K on the crown. That thing was a pretty big deal when it came out. And that was like,
everybody used that.
That was like early 2000s. Yeah, that was pretty popular.
Mm-hmm. That was,
yeah, I could talk about that if you wanted to, like, that's like a many hours conversation. And I don't think we had many hours to talk about it.
Yeah. We gotta do that one.
There's a lot of little stuff like that. Like, you know,
what about the pure spin?
And then like, man, oh, with the
diamond face score, diamond face score,
yeah, the diamond dust on the faces. Those were, those, and then the carbite was the other one. TaylorMade made a wedge like that had the carbite face.
They had the nubbins putter too with the basketball. Remember the basketball?
Yes, I do. I actually think that somebody left the nubbins at Sweetens Cove, and it may still be out there. Dude, I about fell over when it showed up. I was like, you got to be kidding me. There's somebody that's still rolling a nubbins. But so, yes,
listen,
the nubbins.
Listen to this.
The TaylorMade had those balls, the Energel balls that came in those plastic tubes.
Oh,
they
God.
Were just like,
I forgot about those.
So weird and like unpredictable. Like, that's like the greatest thing about golf equipment, man. It's like, it just, it brings out the scientist and engineer and like everybody.
So,
and the weirdest thing is like, so I, you know, I've been like on that side of the business for like 15 years now. It's like, dude, nothing is new. Like guys were trying to do this when they were blacksmiths, but like the technology and manufacturing methods didn't really exist to really do the designs that they had in mind. And it's unbelievable to me when you look at all this vintage old antique stuff and you look at almost everything's been tried before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just people just keep trying the same ideas. The fascinating thing to me is like when you're talking about blades, all the really good blade designs you see over and over again. Like you know, have you ever noticed, like if you look at almost any like OEM blade, like single line cut, low center of gravity, like almost every single one of them to a T is that design because it works pretty well.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
I don't know. It's irons are beautiful. You know, like so much, I think, feel like irons have you need to like the way it looks. You know, I got a funny story about a club. I was playing the mid.
I remembered something horrible. Yeah, finish your story off. I just remembered something absolutely horrible from the 90s. Go ahead.
So I'm playing my practice round at the mid-am, and on one of the tees, somebody left a Warrior hybrid. A Warrior.
One of the ones that they set you free in the mail?
Yeah, at a USGA event. Somebody was gaming a Warrior.
Maybe it just fit that gap in his bag really well. You never know, man. It's like with high, yeah, it's like, man, I tell people all the time with fairway woods, like, man, if you find good fairway woods, they're like old friends. You don't kick them out of the bag because you're, you know, you just don't find.
Like Sonar Tech. This is the best one.
They made some really great stuff back in the day. They had the SS series that had all the different face profiles. There was the 1-2, the 3, there was the 2-5, the 3-5. There was the SS07 that had the adjustable hosel. There was the MP99 that was had like the gold ring on the outside and the kind of purplish metallic paint. They made really good stuff. I had a TRC, which was like their kind of hybrid. I had one of those in my bag for a long time. I still have it somewhere.
I had the SS03 with like an Acro shaft. It was just a beast.
Oh, it was just like a best off, like a beast off the tee. Like it wasn't the easiest off the deck, but it was just an absolute beast off the tee.
I love that thing.
Do you remember the Adams 50-50? That was like that too, where it was just like, man, it was just a deep, deep head. And then Adams came out with the BTY came out after, and that was another, man, those things were bombers.
Tylize was like a great product when it came out.
It was. Adams built that entire company around that single product.
Yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable. Cause I remember like the stuff that they had like early or like late 80s, early 90s, they had like the aerosol. I don't remember what other, they didn't really have anything that was like, oh my God. And then that came out. It was like, oh, we took a fairway wood and we flipped it upside down and it really, really works. And it really, really worked. And they built it. Yeah. They built an entire business on that. Do you remember in the 90s, Yonex and I think Yamaha and Marimon, they made irons that the heads were carbon fiber, Kevlar.
Yeah.
Marimon had the DCA where they were Kevlar. Those were really weird talking about that stuff. Cause I remember there was a member at my club and he would literally like every 3 or 4 months, he would hit so many balls, he'd have to send his 7-iron or whatever back to Yonex and they'd send him like a brand new one. Cause so you're just wearing out the material. And so, yeah, every like 4 months or so, they'd have to send him a new ADX 200 7-iron.
It's like reminds me of talking about Yonex reminds me of those Cleveland Vasses with the club in front of the club head in front of the hosel.
They weren't onset like that. Those actually have some offset. But the way they set the hosel up, the head, the face looked like an egg. And they did this as I think this was when Rossignol first acquired Cleveland. There's a vibration. There's like a medallion in the back that was supposed to absorb vibration. And they had that kind of egg shape and the hosel connected really high on the face. They weren't the first company to do that. This Jerry Barber, who won a PGA, Jerry Barber had irons that he made back in the day that were called the Golden Touch. They were very similar. Hosel on those, though, was like, dude, it was like paper thin. Like, it's just like the hosel on those is just like this little, it's almost like a putter neck that comes up. But those, you know, Pavin won a major with those irons. And they actually, the first ones were stinkers. And then they came out with the Plus. The Plus model came out after the original VAS. And those are actually, I thought those were pretty decent irons. I mean, they were obviously a little unconventional looking, but they performed pretty well. I had a VAS 1 iron when I was in high school. I had that in the bag for a while. That thing was pretty good.
It was
hideous. It's like eye herpes. Awful.
What major winner had one with like the worst equipment?
One with the worst equipment, like, oh man,
that was like a thing in like the 70s and 80s, was like guys playing awful equipment.
I love the set that Johnny Miller won his open with that were I think they were 925 or 945 McGregor's, where he had sawed the hosels off and like bored him down, and those are what he played for a while. That's like the greatest thing about back then, because like there weren't like these huge quantum leaps in equipment from like the 50s to like the 70s, and so guys would play stuff that was 20 years old because it worked. I mean, that's like the thing back then. It was like guys weren't changing clubs because they were tied to some equipment contract and their manufacturer wanted to play this because that's what was on the shelves. I mean, those guys were playing pretty much, I mean, they're playing pretty much whatever they wanted, whatever worked. I mean, sure, they had store brands that they sold with their name stamped on them, but for most of those guys, they bagged what worked for them. They'd go to the factory and, you know, they'd get three or four fairway woods. They'd take them out and they'd hit them, and there'd be one that would work better than the rest, and that was the one that went in the bag. And they would, you know, they would trade the other ones off. They'd find a guy that it worked for, and they'd trade it off for something else. And you'd see that really old equipment on, you'd see that old stuff out on tour, you know, even like in the 70s and 80s. And like I was saying, Freddie played a M85, an old McGregor M85 forever until the 90s. It was like, it's a 40-year-old driver. It was still out in play.
Hey, what was the thing you remembered, the offensive product that you remembered?
Those awful ADX, the Alien Wedge. There's another good one. There's another good. There's another good product of the 90s was the Alien Wedge. And obviously, that thing was pretty. One of the investors was a member at my club. So like everybody at the club I grew up at had one of those in their bag. My dad had one. It was like the only thing he could get out of the sand was his Alien Wedge.
You still see them
in the wild. There's someone that has a deep pain when they get into bunkers. That's like their security blanket. You still see those things once in a while.
Oh God. That's
you do. I
caddying that was a nightmare when you saw one of those. You were like, God, this is a bad
that must
day.
Have been like the most interesting thing doing that, because like you'd see somebody's clubs before you saw them, and you're like trying to figure them out. Because like I'm kind of weird. Like I'll remember people by their golf clubs sometimes more than like anything else. Oh yeah, you're the dude that's got the 990 Bs, or like, you know, I'll remember stuff like that. So you're meeting people, and to me, like looking into somebody's bag before you meet them is like an insight into who they are. It's like, well,
it's funny. You know, I worked bag room and caddied. So many times I'd work the bag room, and then I'd like kind of, I'd get to pick my loop, and I'd pick, you know, Joe member with their guests. And I had already seen the bags and had it scoped out which bags I was taking. And so many times you're misled by if you judge off the clubs, and you're like, God dang, like, you know, like what am I doing with this guy? He's like a tight ass. He's got brand new clubs. He's playing blade irons and he can't break 90. Like what am I doing right now? Like, and I started to learn that I really liked the guy. You find the bag that's super light. And the clubs might be a little older. They might be a little worn, but like there's nothing, no frills about the bag. That's the guy you want. And that's like the sneaky eight that like plays five times a year, but it's really way better than an eight.
Yeah.
And is a cool dude.
Doesn't it amuse you? Like when you go play somewhere like National or Shore Acres or Oakmont or whatever, does it ever amuse you to like walk around and look at the bags that are sitting around just to see the golf clubs that people are playing? Do you ever do that? Like it's maybe it's like a weird habit of mine, but like anytime I'm somewhere like that and I see like other people's clubs out, like I'm always like drawn and interested to see like what they have in their bags. And it's a pretty interesting, like what you usually see.
See, like that's the thing though with me is I don't pay attention to what anybody's playing because I don't want to even think that I should be playing something else.
Well, it's not to think that you should be playing something else, but I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just a little bit wired differently as far as how I look at equipment, and I don't know.
I'm a bum. I don't have anything fancy going on with my equipment.
You're a bum.
Yeah, I've got like I got all old equipment by today's standards, but of my modern equipment.
Do you have besides the Hickory driver? Do you have any wooden drivers around that have like a steel shaft in them?
You know what I have that I love is I have a PT 3-wood.
Okay,
I love that thing.
See, that's not even out of place with a persimmon driver in the bag.
Yeah, it but the problem is it goes as far as the Hickory. You know,
what is it? 13-degree PT?
15, I think. It's
15. Come on, Andy! You hit that further than you hit the Hickory driver.
Yeah, probably about the same. It's not. It's like a 10, and they're both equally as hard to hit off the ground.
Those things were so sexy. Oh. Just like this little tiny, like just this little pea shooter. Like I have like all kinds of weird bags. Like I have all kinds of weird like retro bags I'll go play with, and I've got like I've got like a 90s bag that's got like my old like tour spoon and my Founders Club four wood. And you set those things down and they're just so tiny. But when you catch them solid, they hit so hard. It's unbelievable to me how hard you can hit a golf ball with those things. And they don't really spin because the ball spun like hell. So they were, you know, those things don't really spin.
You know what? You know what I'm eyeing on eBay right now? I've been eyeing it for a little while. Is getting a Baffy back in the bag.
Getting a Brassy?
A Baffler.
Like a 12?
Like a
Baffy. I gotcha.
Getting one of those old Cobra Bafflers back in.
Like one of the laminated, one of the laminated wood ones?
Yeah, like a six wood or something.
Orlemar made a bunch of those too. That's another one to look for. They made a good Orlemar made some good laminate fairways that had a kind of similar brass plate that wasn't quite as severe. The other one is have you ever seen the Ginty before? There's a company called, I don't even know if Stan Thompson's still around, but they had a company called Stan Thompson. Not the Canadian architect. But they have like this really severe sole plate where it's like almost like a rudder. It's like a hard V at the sole. And that thing can get that thing out of like just about any just gunchy lie. My mom had one and my mom was like a magician with it. Like you can get it out of just about any lie. That would be something I'd look at too.
The Ginty.
You're looking for something higher lofted, of course. The Ginty. Yeah. I don't know that they Ginty, I think they're like 20 degrees or so. So it's basically like a five wood.
Let me tell you, the market for the Bafflers on eBay is pretty good. I'm looking at one that's like $16.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, right. It's
You should have some fun with it. Put together like a weird like 90s small head bag and enjoy that like in addition to the hickory. Because I think just playing with all kinds of stuff is just entertaining. It's just, you know, I mean, especially if you're pretty good, you are a good player. Like if you're a pretty good player, I mean, I don't know, you hit those things solid. There's not this vast disparagement other than, you know, you lose a little bit of carry with something wood, but it's just fun playing with that, with old wood, old small wood heads are fun to play. Small metal wood heads, I should say.
I think it makes you way better with modern equipment too.
I would not disagree. The rounds that I would play where I would bust out like a, you know, that when I had that like 5 year spell or so when I was playing with Persimmon, the rounds that I would occasionally play with something relatively modern, I'd use like a 300, 350 cc driver and I could hit those pretty well. But it's just, to me, it's just like, it just, it's such a different focus when you're playing with that equipment. It's like, you're not trying to like kill it. You're trying to hit it solid. Like, have you ever seen those videos of like, someone did this, posted this thing a while ago that was hilarious. It was like down the line at like a tour event in the 90s and you're watching all these tempos and it was just like so different from watching guys on the range today. Cause these guys are playing blades. They're playing small headed drivers and they're not worried about swinging at 130 miles an hour. They're worried about connecting with it and hitting everything pure. Mm-hmm. And it changes your focus playing with that stuff. When I was talking about the guy, when I first got in the golf business, when I was talking to Leith, I used to go play a lot of golf with him and I'd work with him and he was a good stick. He played for Stanford. He was, you know, he was in his 60s at the time and he still had some game and he put this set of blades together. They were a set of J33s and they had some steel fibers. I think they were 80 gram or 95 gram steel fibers in them. And he just striped them. He hit them so much better than any cavity back set he had. And he just couldn't figure out why. And I'm like, man, like, think about it. When you're swinging those things, like, you don't have any other options. It's almost like fear factor. You've got to hit this thing solid or you're not going to get very much out of it. And for whatever reason, it just reined him in. And he played great golf with those off and on for a while. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, man, there's nothing feels better than just hitting that stuff pure because the weight's just so concentrated and it's just a different feedback than what you get with a modern technology filled golf club. It's just so different.
Yeah. That's, just make golf hard again. Make it unfair. Like just what I was talking about.
I'm not saying to make it unfair. I'm just saying to appreciate it differently.
Yeah, that's like
I'm not saying make it unfair. I'm saying appreciate it differently. There's so many different ways to appreciate it, and that's just, you know, one of them. I mean, the other thing I think I've talked to you about before is like the thing that's really interesting with the National Custom Work stuff is like almost half the projects I end up working on with clients are partial sets. They're guys that are trying to build like a 4, 5, 6 club set that they can go out and, you know, throw in a Sunday bag and go walking with.
Interesting.
I just, the way people enjoy golf is changing. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. You can do it by playing different courses, like, you know, like Sweetens. You can go play the Cradle. You can, you know, there's all kinds of neat different things like that. Or you can play with different equipment. I mean, whatever you want to do, man.
That's why I told one
enjoy
of my
golf
buddies.
The way you want to enjoy it. Enjoy golf the way you want to enjoy it. And, you know, don't be ashamed of it. Just embrace it. Enjoy it the way you enjoy it.
Yeah, this buddy of mine, he said he couldn't, the course he played didn't test him enough because it was too short and wide open. And I'm like, then just play with a 5 iron
what
or less.
You know? Ask him what he shot?
Hey, he's really good. Shoot? He's a really good player. He shoots in the 60s out
I'm
there
sure
all
he
the
is,
time.
But what he, I mean, that's like, I mean.
But it's true because you just bash driver and then wedge it on. So I told him like, hey, like if you want to get better, play with just a 5 iron and less. And then you actually have to hit mid irons in the greens. You know, like that's going to make you better. But hey, let's wrap this up. You know, last overrated, sure, underrated, the fair police.
I mean, golf is not by design to be fair. So golf, you know, it's like life, man. It's like playing life.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't think there's quote unquote fair does not exist. That's golf. So I guess I would say they're overrated. They're way overrated.
Hey, that's a good answer. All right, Patrick, thanks for coming on. Thanks for all the time.
My pleasure, man. Anytime. Let's get together soon. We should give me a shout one of these days offline. Let's talk about a couple things.
Yeah, for sure. Can find your stuff on Instagram at National Custom Works. Then you've got your Ferrell gig, BBF.
Boyd Blade and Ferrell Company, and then that's at BB&F Co. And then there's National Custom Works Fine Furniture Department. That's at NCW Fine Furniture on Instagram. And then I think I'm on Twitter. National Custom Works and BB&F are on Twitter. I was one of the guys. I did Twitter for Sweetens for a while. I did the Instagram up until about October. Me and Rod did the Instagram until about October. And then Nash is out there now. Has been doing it. But
So, all right.
I talked too much. I apologize.
It's okay. This is a two-parter. So we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.